This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 38 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we have Dr. Grenchy, aka Grand Mistress Carla. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across from me is one lovely and one not-so-lovely person. Hey, Beast, how are you?
I guess I am the not-so-lovely.
I didn't say who was who.
No, but we have the lovely Chrissy with us, so I'll just say that I'm the ugly one. Yes, we have Chrissy with us, and you and I were just on a picnic with Chrissy this weekend.
Yes, we had a great time.
But tonight, Chrissy is joining us because she has a very special guest in the studio with us via the modern technology of Skype. And Chrissy, I'll leave it to you to introduce your guest.
Thank you, Beast. Tonight at the Kinky Cast, we have a wonderful guest. She's very famous throughout South Florida and has a reputation around the world. Dr. Charlaine Grenchy holds a PhD as a clinical sexologist and is a relationship expert and an authority on BDSM. She graduated from Maimedes University. She's an affiliate of the American Academy of Clinical Psychologists and a diplomat of the American Board of Clinical Psychology. She also wears another hat as Mistress Carla. She's worked as a professional dominatrix with an ongoing, unconventional sex research program since 1980. Her research has been based on observing, interviewing, and working with thousands of people. Her research study has focused on various sexual practices, alternative lifestyles, sexual preferences, sexual human behavior, and most relationship issues. Since 1987, Mistress Carla has been a guest lecturer and educator on human sexual behavior, the BDSM lifestyle, and SM and the law. She has presented at dozens of clubs, organizations, institutes, and local universities, both nationally and abroad, including Nova Southeastern University, University of Miami, Florida Postgraduate Sex Therapy Institute, Texas Sex Therapy Institute, Florida International University, St. Thomas University, Maimedes University, and the German Society for Social Scientific Sexuality Research in Munich, Germany, which was attended by many world-famous sexologists. She has also presented at large national conventions, including Living in Leather and Leather World in Chicago, the world-famous Dressing for Pleasure in New Jersey, and the Orlando Bash in Florida. Dr. Grenchy still offers presentations on these topics. Mistress Carla's guest lectures have been popular for over 25 years because of their combination of exhibits, demonstrations, and potent academic content. Their popularity attracted a broad audience from the general public to graduate students, professors, and mental health professionals, especially in the fields of psychology, clinical sexology, social work, sex therapy, and sex research. Recently, she was invited to be a guest lecturer at Indiana University in coordination with the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex. As Mistress Carla, Dr. Grenchy has been an internationally famous dominatrix since 1980. She gained fame for establishing Florida's first dungeon in her home, which led to a 5-year legal battle in 1980s when Pompano Beach police and Broward sheriffs raided her business. Mistress Carla, I'm going to stop the introduction there. My goodness, what a life you've had.
Yes, I have, actually.
And your book, you've got this fascinating book out now, Queen of Domination, Your Secret Life. I've read your book, and I understand that it talks about all of the adventures you've had leading up to this point in time, including starting off way back in the late 70s as a professional dominatrix in South Florida. What led you to take that step in your life? What brought you to that point?
At that point, actually, was desperation because I felt I was losing my home, and a friend of mine was running an escort agency. And she had an opening for a dominatrix. This is in December of 79. And she asked me if I would like to have the job. And she explained what it was. And I told her she was crazy. I said, you got to be kidding. I'm not doing that. And she said, but you'd be perfect. You're a natural. And I asked her why. And she said, well, she said, look at you. You wear the flamboyant hair, the flamboyant makeup. You like to dress extravagantly. You like to wear black. And you have a very dominant personality. She said, you'd be very good, mistress. She said, and she started calling me mistress right away. It was kind of compelling. And she said, let's think of a name for you. And I said, what would it be? And she said, she went through Shirley, Sarah, and she got to Carla. She said, Mistress Carla. That fits. We'll call you Mistress Carla. And she brought a bag out of her closet, which contained a witch's cape from her Halloween, a strand of rope, and a crop because she rode horseback. And she handed it to me and she said, this is all you'll need to start out. And she gave me an address in Miami to go meet a client in a hotel. And that was my first session. And I did it. I still thought she was crazy. It went against everything I was taught as a child and growing up with the morals and the religious background. And it weirded me out. But the money sounded good. And I thought, I can learn this. I can do this. Well, actually, I started immediately converting my single-car suburban garage into a makeshift dungeon in my home in Pompano Beach, Florida. So in 1980, I started throwing ads around the world in underground magazines, especially out of New York. I was advertising as Mistress Carla, Queen of Domination. Come to my dungeon when you're on vacation in Pompano Beach, Florida. And that's how I started.
Wow. What a brave thing to jump in with both feet like that on the first call, an out call and your first adventure. That must have been a scary, scary moment.
It was. It was scary as well as weird. I mean, it just, you know, nothing kind of made sense to walk into a hotel and see a man of wealth get down on his hands and knees and crawl over and kiss my boots. It was kind of like, really? Men do this?
And okay, you get paid for it.
And for $100 an hour, I get paid for this? Okay. So that's how I was enamored by the profession. And yet when I became involved, as the time went on, I saw there was a definite need for this. That was a very essential part of human behavior. And there needed to be people that were doing this that were good at it.
And I remember those underground magazines in the late 70s. That was our universe in those days. And I'm sure I have seen some of your ads out there. I am quite sure. All right, Chrissy, I am hijacking.
No, that's fine. Please jump in anytime. One thing that I liked about the book, and I wonder if some of these questions that were raised as you had sessions with your clients, you started to look at the psychological aspects of this. And one thing that you wondered was, are these domination sessions so secretive because men feel guilt and shame for what they're doing with the dominatrix? Or are these sessions secretive and such a threat to these men because people are so judgmental? The wheel started spinning and you started to expand on that a little bit. The book's interesting. A lot of the realness of your thoughts come through. Were you abnormal wanting to be a professional dominatrix? You know, these are, like you said, it went against your upbringing and your background.
Yes, it did.
Interesting. Some of the sessions that you have recorded in the book were quite shocking, I think, at some times. You mentioned some of your clients. I won't discuss that here, but you mentioned some of your clients and how they blew your mind and their requests. I found it interesting at this early point in time that you went into this without any training or background. You just jumped in.
That's exactly true, especially I was the only show in town, the only show in the state of Florida, actually. I had no form of training. I knew no dominatrixes. I didn't know the scene. There were no fetish clubs. It was just me, myself, and I in the School of Hard Knocks, learning basically from the clients that came to me to be submissive to me that had been in the scene, some of them 20, 40 years. And from their interview, because I would have an assistant interview them prior to them coming to my dungeon. And then once they got there, they would be interviewed again. And that was brought back to me. And I'd be sitting in my office waiting to see what they requested. And I pondered it, digested it, and then went out to the dungeon and executed it. And from trial and error, basically, I learned that it took a while. This is no easy course. It was quite difficult and quite experimental. I had to explore a lot of different avenues in it and experiment with a lot of different things. And a couple of the fellas were kind of funny. One, I believe, was in the police. I'm not sure, but he brought me some great cuffs. So I thought he had to be a police. He brought handcuffs and leg irons and all this kind of stuff. And he would be in bondage at one point in time. He was into heavy S&M. And this is like in the first month or two of me being in this whole business, which I had no clue about. And if I did something that was not quite right, he would like open his eyes and kind of wink and go, "You can do that harder," or, you know, da da da. And so, some of their little hints, and I just went right with it. And I picked it up so quickly because, like my friend said, I wasn't a natural. And I started taking notes after all my sessions. I had everybody sit down after a session, which is uncommon with dominatrixes. They just like call girls as well. They want to get you in and get you out. But I was doing a research program. Didn't even realize it was similar to what Kinsey was doing in the 50s. And I just saw the need for the education here. And I would sit them down after a session and I would pick their brains and find out what it was. Why they wanted to be here, why they felt they were submissive or had a fetish or a paraphilia, whatever. Didn't even know the word paraphilia back then. That comes from clinical sexology. And what about childhood? And I asked them questions. Didn't even know where these questions came from, Chrissy. I didn't know. They were just coming out. And they were very forthright in telling me everything. And I would take notes and I would file it all. And I realized only maybe 25 years ago or 10 years ago, whatever, that it was a non-conventional research program that I had developed on my own without really knowing what I was doing.
That's fantastic.
Mistress Carla, you were actually one of the first researchers that was conducting quality research into our lifestyle.
I really believe that. Now that you said that, nobody has ever said that really in those particular words to me.
What a incredible longitudinal study that you have there.
Yeah, I had a client list of 500 these, and they were, it was quite compelling because these men were from all over the world. Because where I was situated in Florida near the coast, very heavy tourist trade. So a lot of the tourists and the businessmen would come into Fort Lauderdale and they would come to Pompano to see me. Or if they had their private planes, they came into the private Pompano airport and they came to see me because there was nobody else. So I had people from all over Europe, people from Latin America, South America, all around the United States. And they were telling me about other dungeons. And I was going, really? And of course, some of them were world travelers and they had been to the La Dome in The Hague, in Amsterdam. They had been to Belle de Jour's in New York City.
Wow.
They had been to Jim Hilliard's dungeons, professional dungeons in both LA and San Francisco. And I was like, wow, really? But I always got complimented. You have one of the best we've been in. And I would think, really? Well, that sounds great. Thank you. And I always kept this way back here, you know.
So at this point, you hadn't traveled to any of these other facilities. You were totally winging this.
Totally. I had no clue except some of these underground magazines. I was seeing ads. There were mistresses in the big cities around the country. There was a Mistress Vera out of New York, I believe, a Mistress Thea in New Jersey, a few that I don't remember the names of in 1980. But I really, and there was a Mistress Michelle in Michigan, I believe. Pontiac, Michigan. Other than that, I knew nobody in the scene. I was like you said, solo.
Wow.
Solo.
Wow. Incredible. Yes. Incredible.
Thank you.
I think it's fantastic that the work that you did at that time, so groundbreaking, really just amazing to me. And nowadays, we have all of these protocols and rules, and you must do this, and you must have a mentor, and you must have a trainer, and you must have this and that. And you just figured it out and did your own thing. And you, and looking at what you did it right. You know,
there was no guidebook.
You made the guidebook.
I think so. Created it as you went.
I really like the questions that you list. Some of the questions that you asked your clients, and the list is huge, and it's really in depth. What's your occupation? Are you married, single, divorced? How many years have you been involved with BDSM? Are you a novice? What is your fantasy? What are your phobias? Do you have medical restrictions? And this was back in 1980. You're asking these questions. It's
fantastic. Yeah.
I just find that fantastic. These are the things that we ask now in negotiations regularly. So, you know, you're really groundbreaking.
I've been told by a new PR lady negotiating with, and she read some of my bios, and she said to me a couple of days ago, she said, you were definitely way ahead of your time. And that's how she put it. I had never heard it put that way before.
That's true. I believe that's a good assessment. And one thing that you noted, that before you opened your dungeon, you consulted an attorney. Legal counsel was given, telling you that S&M was legal. As long as you didn't engage in intercourse or fellatio, it
Correct.
Was legal.
That's what he said.
Is S&M legal?
It might differ from state to state. As we know, laws, codes, everything differ from state to state. However, in the state of Florida, I believe there's still a law on the books that says flogging is a sexual act. If flogging is a sexual act, then i.e. it's equated with prostitution, because if money is exchanged for flogging, i.e. it equals prostitution. They probably got that from DSM-4 or 5 or 3 or whatever, you know, the time period was they established that, mm-hmm. that law. But it's really hard to say. S&M, if it's done in the privacy of your home, if it's safe, sane, consensual, I would think it's legal. But once the money is exchanged for a service of that erotic nature, it changes the whole dynamics.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Now, you had a little problem with Broward County Police.
Big problem.
And
you're so sweet.
A little problem might not be the proper
word.
I'm from Florida, and I'm familiar with the East Coast, and so I can relate a little bit to the mindset of that time period there.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, I'd be happy to. February 4th of 1983 was when the Pompano Beach Police and Broward Sheriff's Department decided to raid my home. They had been doing a several-month investigation. They had searched through my garbage, tapped my phone, and followed me, and also apprehended a few friends, leaving my house to interrogate them. So when they came down on me on February 4th of 83, they came with an open-ended search warrant. They ransacked my entire house, not just the dungeon. And they pulled up U-Hauls to my garage, opened the door, and just emptied it out, everything that wasn't bolted down. Had they thought things were bolted down, they probably would have bought the right tools to take that too, but they didn't. They turned the place upside down looking for drugs, I was told. I'm very anti-drug. Luckily, they didn't find drugs, because had they tied that in with what they considered prostitution, it would have gone very much heavier on me, I'm sure. I heard that one of the cops, when they stopped one of my friends at a later date, say that they were sorry they didn't find drugs, and that they were glad they left my book untouched on the table, because they're hoping I'd print it out, publish it with their name in it so they could sue me.
Wow.
Yeah. But I went through, it was a 3-hour raid. It was quite interesting and horrible, because I was a home alone and in my underwear in bed with cramps, menstrual cramps, when they beat through my door. It was just me and my little dog. My girlfriend had gone to the store in my new Corvette, and she had approached the house and saw it surrounded by police cars with the lights going, and just kept on going.
Right.
Thank God. So what that did was, what they did was something very nasty. They didn't arrest me after the 3-hour raid. They let me sit there with a busted door, and they left. And they waited till the 30 days. They're allowed 30 days in which to come back and arrest you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
They made me wait it out.
And sweat it out.
Wondering what night they were going to barge through my door again. So we lived on the lam in the middle of the season, staying in hotels, staying at friends, doing this, that, and the other, worried that one night, you know, and we slept in our clothes as well in case cops burst through our door. It was quite horrible, and we finally turned ourselves in at the 30th day because the cops surrounded our home and the whole area we lived in, waiting for us to come home that night. And our attorney called me on our way home and said, it's the 30th day, don't go home. And we did a U-turn and got out of there, and that was the night that they waited till 1 in the morning waiting for us, and we didn't show up. And when we didn't show up to home, they went down and they busted through several adult bookstores and ransacked them out of frustration.
Wow. Yeah, I hate to say I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. At that time, Broward County police were not that friendly, let's say.
No, they weren't.
You had quite an experience. So what happened after you were arrested? What were you charged with? What did they finally determine?
They charged me with five charges of prostitution related. Two, running a house of ill fame. One, providing a place for assignation. One, for living off the earnings of a prostitute, which is like the weirdest thing I ever heard. And I can't remember right offhand what the fifth one was. But when we actually, after 2 years, got in the courtroom for my trial, somehow my attorney had gotten four of the five dropped. So I was only facing 5 years instead of 25 or 30 years in jail. If you can imagine that. So I was facing 5 years in jail if everything went wrong.
I'm amazed they charge you with being a prostitute and being your own pimp.
Yes, because one lady next door one time, Beast had come over because she said she needed some extra money. She was English, had that English accent. I had a client that said he would love to, you know, have a mistress with an English accent. So she came over and did a session for me, but they probably were, it was in the time frame that they were watching me and had everything, you know, taped. And that's what that's where they got that charge.
This was the Miami Vice era in Florida, wasn't it?
I think just before it.
Just before,
it was. The Mayflower Madam was going crazy up in New York. That she was getting attacked up in New York at the same time. And I remember, Beast, this is interesting. It became so political that at one point in time, my lawyer said to me, they're trying to say that you run one of the largest profitable prostitution rings in the world.
Congratulations.
I said, what? I wish. Wouldn't that be nice?
Where was the millions at, right?
I'm telling you, yeah.
Yeah, this was the Reagan era, too, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
Yeah. I think it was the Reagan era.
In South Florida, it was pretty wild and kind of like the Wild West in a lot of ways. And the police were running loose and free, and it was a very different time.
It was corrupt, wasn't it? It was,
yes, it was.
A lot of scandals, a lot of payoffs. I believe it was the same within the same time frame from the late 70s to the early 80s. Wasn't Larry Flint doing his thing, trying to fight the court battle of getting freedom of expression as well?
Yes, he was.
Yes, he was.
It was truly a interesting time of the war between the ultra conservative and the free thinkers.
Yes, exactly.
And you got caught up in that battle.
The odd thing about that was in the state of Florida, Chrissy, prostitution was considered a misdemeanor prior to my raid.
Really?
They had just changed it to a felony when I got raided.
Well, Florida is.
And after my court case, it went back to a misdemeanor.
That's interesting.
I got caught right in that middle, too. Isn't that awful?
You must have had some friends, and I'll use that word sarcastically, in some very high or low places.
At the time, I didn't feel I had a friend in the world, actually. It seemed like everybody, the rats deserted the ship. I couldn't tell my parents, my father, I should say. And I had no camaraderie from any mistresses. However, right before I got busted, I had met Michelle Peters out of Michigan, Pontiac, Michigan.
Yep.
And she was planning on moving to South Florida to set up a dungeon.
Oops.
When she heard I got raided, she said, uh-uh, no, I'm going to California. And she went to California.
Uh-huh. Well, we are glad that you survived this. How did the court case go?
It was a witch hunt. it became so political that they threw the book at me to set me up as a role model example of don't do this. I got the, the biggest punishment that they could have given me, which was 5 years of probation. They adjudicated me guilty in the state of Florida with a felony record.
Wow.
I know, and all I did was provide a service. I know it's compelling. They tried to recoup $1,500 for their restitution.
Their restitution?
Yeah, it was crazy. Oh, 500 hours community service. I got off that in halftime because I was a good girl.
Congratulations, and I am sorry.
Oh, and I got 90 days in jail.
Oh, wow. But you obviously bounced back from this little detour.
Actually.
And when did you head for college?
Oh, well, I had already been in college in the late 60s, but I didn't go back to college until, it's not even in the book, probably, because I didn't go back to college until 2002.
Because all of this had a major change in you. You discovered this sexual world that you weren't aware of, and you were you were obviously inquisitive. Was your original degree in psychology?
No, liberal arts, actually.
Liberal arts?
Yeah, because I am an artist. But you're funny. What happened was, while I was still on probation, I met a professor at Nova Southeastern University, and I started talking to him, and I told him my story. He was interested. And when he heard my story, he was like sitting there like, oh my, would you like to tell that to my classroom? I said, why? And he said, because you have a wealth of knowledge under your belt here. And my classes are in human sexuality and psychology. He said, they could learn a lot from you. And I said, well, I was in school, embarrassed and nervous to stand up and give a book report. He said, you can do it. Mistress Carla, you can do it.
Mistress Carla.
Yes. And I said, okay, all right. So in 1987, when I got off probation, I started lecturing to his classes, and that spread to other universities in South Florida and conventions and all that kind of stuff, which I've been doing 25 years, and not as much lately in the past year, in the last 2 years, actually, because I've been writing the book and kind of concentrating. But that's what really got my whole focus and career turned into a different, better path, was that professor and his encouragement. And I thought, well, you know, if he has that much faith in me, I'm going to have faith in myself. So I pulled my bootstraps back on and got back up on that horse and decided, you know what, even though the judge threatened if I sell any books, he said, if I ever see you in my courtroom again, you're going to prison for a long time. And I thought to myself, the hell with you. I'm going to do what I feel in my heart is right. And that's what I did. I put another ad in, starting to do consultations for people in this scene.
Oh.
There still were no fetish parties, no fetish clubs. There was nothing.
Oh, wow.
This is coming up to 1990. All right. There were a few people now that were doing sessions, a couple mistresses in Florida, Sabrina Ward, Mistress Maya Joy Black, a couple in Miami, and some cross-dressers out of Fort Lauderdale were doing sessions. But I put an ad in because of my experience for people in the scene to come and talk to an expert. $200 an hour sitting in a restaurant. I was talking to people, couples, singles, fetishists, etc., about the scene. And they kept saying, is there a fetish club in Florida? I said, no. Well, Mistress Carla, why don't you open one? And I was thinking to myself, what am I fucking crazy? And I'd listen to all this. I got more requests for why don't I open one? And finally, an NYU, former NYU professor, PhD, was sitting in front of me. And he said, blah, 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 blah. And then he wanted to hear my story. And I told him, and his mouth dropped. He said, Mistress Carla, what would you do if you could do anything? What would you do right now? I said, open the first dungeon club in Florida. And he said, you're out of your fucking mind. I said, yes, I am. That's what I'd like to do. I've lived on the edge all my life. I'm not going to stop now. And he said, did you go get arrested? You get busted again? I said, oh, well, I guess that's what, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. I said, that's what I'd like to do. And he asked me if I would like to try something else first. So I hesitantly and, you know, out of protest, opened up this little private gym. And I didn't like it, but, you know, that's not me. So I gradually turned that space into a dungeon in later 1991.
Where was that located?
In the that plaza in North Lauderdale on Rock Island Road and Southgate Boulevard.
Okay.
I started operating the first fetish parties in Florida, in the first dungeon club in Florida, right there.
Do you remember what year that was?
Yes, 1991, and I licensed it in 92. It was working. It was just people coming out of the woodwork, and I set myself up for it, not knowing what the repercussions were going to be, actually. I worried, and then a year later, I started getting bomb threats. People were calling my business number and threatening to bomb my business. They were threatening my life when I left at night late after a party, thinking that I would close down. I did not. I went and opened up anyway, in spite of it all. I found out that was a competitor that had moved down from New York who was trying to put me out of business so he could pick my brain and do the same.
That's interesting. I'm sorry that happened to you. I remember hearing of a dungeon years ago when I lived in Florida, and I was told that it closed. I didn't know there was a business up and running. I thought it was shut down. Maybe the one that I heard closed was your private dungeon.
Oh,
that might have been the story that I heard.
That could have been.
No,
yes.
I understand. There's a club running in Miami now that is associated with you in some way. I don't know if you're the founder or are you currently operating a dungeon in the area?
Actually, I operated Command Performance, which was the name of my place, for 16 years. I sold it to my manager, Lady Regina, in 2007, and it's still operating. It's been there since 1991.
Fantastic.
Still operating, yes.
I'm just totally wowed by the story. I'm sitting back and taking in this history.
Yes, it's something. I have a friend who's known as Grand Mistress K here in this area, and she says she knows you. You may remember her as Mistress K and the Duchess. They attended an event that you were holding and said that it was a fantastic time.
The one you're referring to is the Mistress's Day leather event that I started. It was the first leather convention, a BDSM convention, in the state of Florida in 1995. And I invited the Duchess and Mistress K, and I think there was another lady up that way, as well as mistresses from around the country whom I had met at Dressing for Pleasure in the early 90s. And several of them came to be mistresses to do workshops, et cetera, et cetera. And that was held at a Holiday Inn in Fort Lauderdale. The Holiday Inn at the time got threats.
Oh, my.
My competitor tried to get us kicked out of there, too. But I went to the manager of the hotel and explained to him that not to be worried by the calls he was receiving. It was people that were constantly trying to get me out of business so they could be, you know, rule the roost and be the kingpin of BDSM in town. That's what I have experienced ever since.
I'm sorry you had those unfortunate experiences. I really want to thank you for taking the time today to share your story. It's fascinating, and I hope that people will buy your book, Queen of Domination. It's excellent.
Queen of Domination, My Secret Life. It it's a rare book because of the I explain in full detail the diversity of female sexuality, which is very uncommon for any female author in the United States to write about. And as you saw, Chrissy, I'm very explicit with how I feel and how it went and what I did. And it makes the book quite unique.
Yes, it is. It's very unique. And I recommend it.
Thank you.
From the historical standpoint of a woman who's groundbreaking and all of the trials and tribulations you went through to get to the point you are now. Fabulous.
Thank you
again.
Jason here with the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. Did you know the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom is here to help you when you are being discriminated against because you're kinky? NCSF helps groups and events that are being talked about in the media. We help people find kink-aware lawyers when there is a child custody dispute or someone needs help with a civil or criminal problem. We also help kinky businesses stay on the right side of the law, from pro-doms to fetish clubs. You, too, can ask for help from the National Coalition of Sexual Freedom Incident Reporting and Response Program visit us at ncsfreedom.org.
You have been listening to episode 38 of the Kinky Cast. Today we heard Dr. Grenchy, a.k.a. Grand Mistress Carla. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody and the Beast, I'm Max. Next week we bring you Toymaking with Dark Innovations.